Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. On this day, when the Bilderberg Group, headed by Henry Kissinger, meet in secret in Switzerland, we will begin and discuss political conspiracy with Jacob Halbrunn, senior editor at the National Interest. We will also examine the real Republican national strategy, which has nothing to do with economic recovery and jobs, and everything to do with them keeping their jobs by fair means or foul. Then we will speak with a specialist on Syria, Dr. Muraf Juhijati, who is a professor of Middle Eastern Studies at the National Defense University's Near East South Asia Center for Strategic Studies. We will examine the evidence of mutinies within the Syrian army and the brinkmanship the Assad dictatorship is threatening Israel with by playing the Palestinian card. Then finally, we will speak with Mazieh Bahari, a correspondent for Newsweek who was jailed by the Iranian regime during the preview of the Arab Spring, the Green Revolution of 2009. His father was jailed and tortured by the Shah, and his sister was jailed and tortured by Khomeini, and we will talk about his experiences at the hands of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps and his hope that Iran will soon be free of the current religious fascist regime of Khomeini and Ahmadinejad, which is akin to America being run by the Reverend Pat Robinson and his sidekick, Ted Nugent. I'm now joined by Jacob Halbrunn, who is a senior editor at the National Interest and the author of They Knew They Were Right, The Rise of the Neocons. Previously, he was an editorial writer for the LA Times, a senior editor at the New Republic, and a Japan Society Fellow. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jacob Halbrunn.
Thanks, Ian.
Today is the day that the Bilderberg Group get together at a five-star ski resort in Switzerland. Of course, you know, they have assumed mythical powers in conspiracy circles as being the kind of backroom boys who run the world. I noticed, Jacob Halbrunn, that you, in the New York Times, you reviewed this new book, Among the Truth, as a journey through America's growing conspiracy underground. Do you have any sense of why it is that this Bilderberger thing has taken on so much weight in terms of it being, being the center of the world, the puppeteers that pull the strings?
I think there's, on the right, there has always been suspicion of the Bilderbergers, because the right has always been suspicious of elite who are conniving to subvert the interests of the common man. And the Bilderberger Group, which is an international economic group of his, somehow, because I think it meets in also in Switzerland, I believe that has taken on over the decades enormous importance for the John Birch Society and other organizations.
I think equally on the left, there are conspiracy theorists on the left. I don't know, where do the truthers come down in your political lexicon?
Well, the truthers are primarily their own species, which is concerned with 9/11, which they believe was a hoax perpetrated not by Muslim terrorists, but by the Bush administration.
He depicts America as a country where paranoia is mounting and is inspired by an invisible and nefarious oligarchy.
That is correct. And Jonathan Kay leans toward the conservative side of the spectrum. So he focuses primarily on the left in his book, with some attention to the right.
Just to finish up with the Bilderbergers, because I really wanted to talk to you more about what's happening in national politics, particularly at the state level, and I'm sort of desperately seeking some narrative out there in terms of the opposition, if you could call the Democrats the loyal opposition. Given that Henry Kissinger's now in charge of the Bilderbergers, or he along with this French Viscount, do you think that there is a critique to be had of the press for allowing this kind of secrecy to persist and not smoking these people out? If the press can ambush Lindsay Lohan coming out of a nightclub, why can't they ambush Henry Kissinger leaving this five-star hotel after 4 days of secret meetings with the world?
Well, they certainly could. I don't think that much of interest is occurring in these meetings. I suspect they're rather boring. Most of these people don't need, I think it's more of an ego thing, and that to meet like this than it is of any practical significance. These people are powerful and important in their own right. The Bilderberg Group is just a forum in which they meet occasionally.
I suppose maybe I should not wish for the campaign year to start any earlier than it will. And I assume that sometime in 2012 the Democrats will develop a narrative. But what strikes me about what's happening now is the utter hypocrisy of the Republicans' claims that they want to put America back to work and jobs, jobs, jobs. If you look at all of the legislation in the state houses, they're entirely to do with redistricting and with bringing in voter impediments so that the Democratic base can't come out, voter ID restrictions, restricting the period where people can file absentee ballots, etc. This is a coordinated effort through a group called ALEC, which is funded by the Koch brothers. And then you've got also these anti-union activities going on with the Governor Christie in New Jersey, and of course we all know about Wisconsin. So that's what's happening at the state level, and at the federal level, their idea for getting America back to work is to cut taxes. At least that's Tim Pawlenty's idea, the latest out of the box.
Yeah, the Pawlenty plan is particularly striking because it's so grotesque.
Where is the counter-narrative? Who's pointing out the absolute hollow absurdity of this sleight of hand, if you will, where they claim to be about jobs, but they're really about maintaining their power and perpetuating their power in office?
I think it goes even further, Ian. It's about extending their power, about using this economic crisis as a smokescreen to smuggle in actually even more radical policies, as we see with Pawlenty.
So you think that having sold the deficit hoax and this ludicrous idea of defaulting on the national debt that nobody takes seriously except the Tea Party people, that they persuaded enough Americans to believe that there is really a crisis, and when in fact there's a revenue crisis, and if Pawlenty and company have their way, there'll be even less revenues. Now, maybe that's their idea. Maybe they're borrowing from Grover Norquist's notion of shrinking the government down so you can drown it in the bathtub.
Well, they really have no incentive for the economy to recover in the next 2 years either.
Every time I mention that to people, they say I'm being terribly cynical, and how dare I suggest such a thing. But that's, after all, what Mitch McConnell said, wasn't it? His job is to destroy Obama?
I would hardly think that you could be too cynical about D.C. politics.
This strategy would have to work in coordination with big corporate interests in Wall Street, wouldn't it, to sit on all of the recovery and to hold back on investment and for the banks not to open up and lend out money?
Yeah, I mean, it looks pretty grim. And coupled with the Supreme Court decisions about regarding corporations as human beings, I think apart from the Paul Ryan plan, which is that is a fiasco politically, but I think the Republicans have hung the recession now onto Obama. That I think will be their strongest line for the next 2 years. That this is truly Barack Obama's presidency, that he promised lower unemployment, and in fact, it's higher than he predicted it would be. That seems to be the main talking point.
In addition to that, I think they're going to say that Obama's stimulus didn't create jobs, it only created debt.
Precisely.
But of course, the truth of the matter is that they didn't.
The counter argument would be that Obama was too timorous upon entering the presidency and should have been much more audacious, and that this, in fact, could prove to be the undoing of him receiving a second term. The fact that he wasn't bold enough and didn't spend enough. He spent too little rather than too much.
Well, that was, of course, people like Paul Krugman and others warned at the time that that was fairly inevitable, and the stimulus is running out. So the question
would... They also predicted that it would run out precisely at this time and that the economy would then lurch back into a double dip.
Right. Given that there's no narrative or plans here except to try and put a good face on the bad news that keeps coming, like last Friday's dismal jobs report, why not come up with a counter-narrative? And what about the fact that things that are hurting people most in the pocketbook are gas prices and food prices, and we know that they're being gamed and manipulated by speculators?
Yes, and Obama is clearly going to continue tacking to this center over the next 2 years. So there isn't much he can even do on the economy as far as he's unable to get anything through Congress, that's for sure.
why not start a narrative and start a debate that he should have started from day one? He should never have allowed the Tea Party to run away with the outrage about Wall Street and end up getting it wrong and being, in fact, you know, the useful idiot of the Koch brothers and other oligarchs. If these powerful interests are sitting on the economy so that the Republicans get a sweep in 2012, why not smoke them out? Being nice to Wall Street has clearly not paid off for Obama.
No. I think essentially he's someone fairly, well, he's obviously a pretty cautious, if not conventional instincts. And much of this can be traced back to the advisors that he picked. I mean, the president really is somewhat hostage. He was hostage to Larry Summers and other people, and he did exactly what they advised.
Again, I'm speaking with Jacob Halbrun, the senior editor at The National Interest and author of They Knew They Were Right, The Rise of the Neocons. Previously, he was an editorial writer for the Los Angeles Times and senior editor at The New Republic and a Japan Society fellow. Just in turning then away from the domestic economy and the lack of a real political debate in this country, nobody's talking anything real about the economy and the challenge of revenues as opposed to the deficit hoax, which is designed as an excuse to destroy what little social programs we have. And given that we don't have a social safety net, one wonders whether this country is heading into a kind of third world plantation economy.
Well, it could end up looking like Brazil, with a sort of vast lower class population and a wealthy sliver, you know, living in gated communities and very prosperous. You know, Greece is another. I mean, it's a wealthy country overall, but it's going to be interesting to see how mismanaged a first world country can be and what occurs to it. I mean, the contrast with Germany, for example, is pretty stark.
Well, there again, one would think that there's a narrative to be put forth of why Germany's doing well, not the least of which is that unions sit on the boards there. There is a social contract that's deep and generous, and people pay their taxes and expect government services here. What do we get back for our taxes? Corporate welfare.
It would have taken a much more visionary, and it would have taken the Barack Obama who campaigned to actually serve as president. But a metamorphosis took place as soon as he entered the Oval Office. Hmm. Do you realize that Barack Obama is prosecuting five people for leaks, and including, there's a front page story in the Washington Post this morning, a former National Security Agency employee. They're trying to put the guy in jail for 35 years.
Right.
Obama is more punitive than Bush was on many of these civil liberties issues.
And this guy, by the way, he did not reveal any NSA secrets. He just revealed the fact that NSA had blown billions of dollars on a worthless project that many people inside the NSA had warned was a complete boondoggle.
I compared it to the Moscow show trial this morning.
Right. Well, and General Hayden was the champion of this turkey.
Exactly. This person who was a whistleblower is a patriot,
right,
who's being threatened and vilified. But fortunately, the government's case appears to be collapsing.
Let me just end up here touching on foreign policy. We're doing a round robin here of touching all the bases. You've written a piece in The National Interest, Samantha and Her Subjects, about Samantha Power, who's apparently an increasingly important influence on the National Security Council, and that she sort of revived in this way this alliance between liberal hawks and neoconservatives. And the example that you cite, of course, is the Libyan intervention, which is based on humanitarian considerations, and that within the councils of the White House, the warning to Obama apparently was that Benghazi will be to Barack Obama what Srebrenica was to Bill Clinton. Clearly, NATO is trying to kill Gaddafi. That doesn't seem to be too blunt a description, wouldn't you say?
Yes. I mean, this was an ill-conceived venture, which I try to point out in the article. You can justify just about any military intervention under the guise of humanitarian action. And we have now engaged in a war in a third country, and we have Afghanistan, Iraq, and now we blundered into Libya. And supposedly this is going to be over in a few weeks. Now it's months later.
Well, I have actually...
And no one even knows what will happen to Libya now that we have intervened.
Right. And of course, we're pretending that the
civil war. If Gaddafi is killed, who's going to establish a government there, and who's going to pay for it above all?
Right, and the standard by which we went into Libya should be applied to Syria, but it's not for.
Well, there are calls by neocons,
right,
for intervention in Syria.
Of course. Well, they were calling for that well before the Arab Spring, but. Just let me just run by a theory, and maybe it ties into the Bilderberg meeting. This is my little bit of conspiracy, Jacob. My sense is that there was a realpolitik reason for the Libyan intervention, and that was that had Gaddafi continued on into Benghazi and slaughtered the opposition and absolutely wiped them out, he would have been back in the saddle, obviously. And it would have been impossible for the European and the United States and other Western governments to deal with this pariah with blood on his hands. But conversely, the Chinese and the Russians would be only too happy to deal with him, and they'd get their foot in there with the oil and with oil contracts. So do you think it had a lot to do with the Europeans keeping their foot in the door vis-a-vis the oil?
I'm not so sure. I had dinner with Romano Prodi, who was the former prime minister of Italy, as all this was going on a couple months ago. And the Europeans were pretty, it's true that France and England were gung-ho, but Italy and Germany were not as enthusiastic about this venture. In fact, Berlusconi may well have been on Gaddafi's payroll.
Well, Craxi was. He warned Reagan of that the bombs were coming, and that's why Gaddafi lived.
Yeah. No, I'm sure that for the French, I do think Sarkozy's personal vanity played a large role.
Along with Bernard-Henri Lévy, right?
Well, I mean, your theory is one that I hadn't really thought through, but is quite intriguing.
Well, we'll do a follow-up then. Okay. I thank you for joining us here today, Jacob Halbrand. Again, I've been speaking with Jacob Halbrand, a senior editor at The National Interest and author of They Knew They Were Right, The Rise of the Neocons. Previously, he was an editorial writer for the Los Angeles Times, a senior fellow at the New Republic, and a Japan Society fellow. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about Syria and the possibility of the Syrian army cracking up.